The third case for argument is Fedosina Villa versus Gonzalez. And Ms. Margolin, is that?
Yes, Your Honor.
Ms. Margolin, you may proceed.
May it please the Court, I'm Yana Margolin for the petitioner, Tatiana Fedoseeva. The petitioner is a woman of Russian nationality and ethnicity who was born in 1964 in the former Soviet Union. She was born in the city of Sovetsk, which is now part of Russia, and she lived in Russia until 1984, which is when she moved to Latvia. In 1991, prior to the collapse of the Soviet Union, she married a Latvian national, thereby gaining temporary residence in Latvia. And she continued to reside in Latvia until her departure and her arrival in the United States in 1993. While living in Latvia...
And before you get into that, because I want to sort of start at the tail end, because, you know, she is saying, you know, she's stateless and therefore entitled to asylum here. And, you know, I would like you to address that Eighth Circuit case that dealt with a very similar issue where the IJ had ordered ethnic Russians who had come to the U.S. from Latvia removed either to Latvia or to Russia. You know, even though they claimed they were stateless, you know, why should we, assuming you would lose just for a moment, you know, why shouldn't we follow that and affirm the IJ on that?
The reason for that, Your Honor, and the difference between that case and this case is the fact that this case is not only based on statelessness. It's the statelessness coupled with persecution, past persecution that she experienced. And the fact that even arguing for a moment that if she was just simply stateless, she would still be ineligible for asylum, in this situation, statelessness and the judge's decision that she was not, in fact, stateless is based on conjecture by the judge. And we are trying to show bias against the petitioner here. And even though statelessness coupled with the past persecution that she experienced does make her eligible for asylum, if the judge made her decision on statelessness based on her pure conjecture, we certainly couldn't go on further and look at all of the other biases that were made against my client. While living in Latvia, the petitioner was persecuted based on her Russian nationality. She was dismissed from her work. She was evicted from her home. She was attacked on the streets. Her daughter also experienced an attack by Latvian nationalists where the authorities did nothing. She was hospitalized for that attack. When the petitioner arrived in the United States, she filed for asylum before the asylum office in Chicago, Illinois, and that office referred it to the immigration judge. The immigration judge denied her asylum.
And can we go back a minute to the firing? Because I know that she claimed she was fired from her job, but one of the things the government points out is that documents were submitted saying that she was laid off with her consent.
Your Honor, the in the record on page 5, let's see, on 557 of the record, this is a copy of the actual workbook record of the petitioner, and it basically shows that this is an official record of the Latvian government that was required at the time, and they show the entire work history there. And the way that it is phrased there is that everything that happens to a person, including any admonishments, any demotions, any problems, any time that she was reprimanded for any work that she had missed or anything that she had done through her work has to be recorded in that workbook. And that workbook specifically shows that she was, in fact, employed by that company and was promoted. And at just one particular point, she was just simply dismissed. And the way that it is translated, it's according to the Latvian Labor Code, Section 31, which in the record is not clear what that is, but according to the petitioner's testimony, it is basically an excuse that was used to tell her that because she is ethnically Russian, she could no longer be employed by a bad company, and because of certain things that she had done with respect to subordinates. She had subordinates who were of Latvian, who were Latvian nationalists and who had wanted to miss work at one point because they wanted to attend a demonstration against against Russians, ethnic Russians living in Latvia, and they wanted to do that with pay, which was against all work regulations. And when she refused to give them that opportunity, which was completely within her power as their supervisor, she was reprimanded for that by her superiors, and then shortly afterwards she was dismissed.
Now, don't you say that she is without a state?
Yes, Your Honor.
All right, have you presented any law to us?
Your Honor,
any Russian law or any Latvian law that will support your theory of that? Or was it presented at the hearing?
Your Honor, it was presented in the form of the human rights reports for both the countries of Latvia and for the country of Russia.
What did the human rights report state that you say supports your theory?
Your Honor,
what specifically?
With respect to Russia, the country, the reports that were presented were for the year 2001, but I believe there's no difference at this point. They basically say that Russia is very strict in the way that they govern citizenship in that country. And
but what is the law?
They go through the what is called the propiska system, the very strict registration system. And those individuals who were not residing in Russia prior to 1991, which was the collapse of the Soviet Union, and who did not, even if they were born in that country, if they did not claim their rights to citizenship within a certain period of time after 1991, they forfeited that right. Now, with respect to Latvia, even though she had resided in that country since 1984, she only gained temporary rights in 1991 because she had married a Latvian national. She had divorced him in 1996 while already in the United States, and thereby she no longer had any temporary rights in Latvia as well. So she could not file for citizenship having no rights to residency.
Is that all in that report you're referring to?
Your Honor, the report for Latvia specifically says that anybody, including ethnic Russians, they don't make a distinction, can file for citizenship, which is true. However, in order to file for citizenship, the report also says you need to have some sort of a temporary right. It would be the same thing as a person coming from any other country, from Japan, for example, or Italy, just flying into Latvia and applying for citizenship. They can apply. But in order to be accepted for citizenship, the person first has to have temporary, at least some form of right to reside in that country. Your Honor, I see my light is up.
Well, let me just ask you this, going back to Russia now. She could qualify for a simplified naturalization process there, right, since her mother is a citizen of the Russian Federation?
No, Your Honor. That has absolutely nothing to do with her. She's an adult. And even though she was born in that country and her mother is a citizen of that country, that does not immediately confer any citizenship rights to her.
Well, I know it doesn't immediately confer it. My question is, couldn't she go through a simplified naturalization process?
No, Your Honor, she could not, because she did not reside in Russia at the time of the collapse. In fact, she hadn't resided in Russia since 1984, and she did not claim citizenship rights within that country within that period of time, so she cannot go back and do that now.
Now, when she arrived in this country in 1993?
That's correct, John.
When did she apply for asylum?
She applied for asylum in 1997. She kept waiting for the situation to change, for the political situation. She had a daughter, a minor daughter. She had her mother. She had lived, you know, her life in the former Soviet Union. She wanted to go back. She had wanted the situation to change where she would feel safe enough to go back, but that didn't happen. The situation did not improve.
To Judge Williams' question, is there any reason to believe that she could not receive the citizenship in Russia today?
Well, Your Honor, The petitioner had testified in court that she had attempted to inquire as to her citizenship rights, and the consulate had told her that she has no rights, no citizenship rights.
Well, did she give up her residency in Russia when she visited in Latvia, or is your position that because she went to Latvia, she surrendered, she became a resident of Latvia?
At the time, she wasn't visiting Latvia. She moved to Latvia to live in 1984, and because her first husband was reassigned, this was all part of the form of one country, of the Soviet Union at the time. So only when the country collapsed in 1991 and Russia and Latvia became independent countries could she then claim residency or citizenship in one or the other, and because of the circumstances, she could do neither at this point.
All right. Ms. McGowan, your time expired, but I'll give you a moment after after we hear from Ms. Jurad.
May it please the Court, Deborah Garrett on behalf of the U.S. Attorney General Alberto Gonzalez. Your Honors, we ask that you deny Ms. Fedosieva's petition for review because she simply has not met her burden in showing that she's eligible for relief. There's nothing in the record that compels the finding that she was credible. There's nothing that compels the finding that she was persecuted. And even though she claims that she's stateless, statelessness alone does not per se render somebody a refugee. She must still present a credible story that she has a well-founded fear of persecution in her country of origin or last habitual residence. And Ms. Fedosieva has not done that. Now, the immigration judge applied the correct legal standard in determining that Ms. Fedosieva was not credible.
Before you go further, what's your view of whether or not she can qualify for naturalization going through a simple process in Russia because of her mother's citizenship and her past?
Naturalization in Russia?
Russia, right.
Ms. Fedosieva claims that she's not able to naturalize in Russia because she has to go back to Latvia first and apply for naturalization. But the only thing in the record that supports this is Ms. Fedosieva's own statements. And she originally claimed, well, I went to the embassy and asked them questions, and this is what they told me. When she was confronted with that during her testimony, she changed her story and said, well, I actually never talked to them. My former attorney talked to them, and this is what my attorney told me to do. And asked what she did when she followed up with what her attorney said, she said, well, I didn't even follow up on it because I just knew they wouldn't allow me because I'm an ethnic Russian. So there's nothing in the record that supports any claim that she could not be naturalized. And the record does show that her daughter, who was born in Latvia, or perhaps it's unclear if she was born in Latvia or if they went after the daughter was a year old, but the daughter grew up in Latvia, and she's become a Russian citizen. So without anything in the record supporting her claim that she could not be naturalized, the record just simply does not compel the finding that she could not be. And more importantly, regarding Latvia, the record indicates at one point she was a resident of Latvia. She was married to a Latvian citizen, and the country reports and the record show that that at this point in time, 95% of ethnic Russians who are applying for citizenship in Latvia are granted that citizenship. So again, there's nothing in the record that supports Ms. Fedosieva's claim that she couldn't become a citizen or resident of Latvia. But regardless, even if she cannot become a resident or a citizen of either country, she must still show the same well-founded fear of persecution as must anybody else applying for asylum in the United States. And Ms. Fedosieva has not done that.
That 95% figure, is that from a recent in-country report?
It was the 2004 State Department country report. In 2003, Latvia passed an EU referendum, and upon the passage of that 2003 referendum, there was Latvia lowered its standards for the requirements of what people needed to do to become citizens of Latvia. And also with the passage of the EU referendum, ethnic Russians are given the right to vote. They're given the right to hold office. There's education programs that are government-funded that are in Russian. In fact, more than, I believe it's 15% of parliament are non-ethnic Latvians. So certainly Ms. Fedosieva just simply claiming, well, I know they wouldn't accept me back in Latvia, is not supported by anything in the record, and actually the record supports the contrary. Now, as far as Ms. Fedosieva's credibility, she was given every opportunity to provide a candid, credible story, but each time she told the story of persecution, it changed. For instance, the alleged incident on the street where she was beaten, the first time she told the story, she claimed that she was walking home from work where three men attacked her, began kicking her, kicked her repeatedly until the point she nearly lost consciousness. But just by circumstance, a bus was passing by, stopped, and the men stopped kicking her. At this point, she claimed, oh, I wasn't employed, so I was able to go home and take care of myself, so I don't have any medical records, and I didn't require any type of medical help. When she told about the incident during her testimony, her story completely changed, and she said, well, I was walking with a friend of mine when two people approached me. One of them struck me one time. My friend called the ambulance. The ambulance refused to treat me because I'm an ethnic Russian. And then after I was treated, I went to the militia station to make a report. Of course, now she's saying she was treated. She was confronted with that during her testimony, and she changed her story again and said, well, what I meant to say is when I went to the militia station, they gave me treatment, and then I filed a report. Her story of persecution in terms of what happened to her daughter is equally inconsistent. Initially, she claimed that her daughter was outside their home playing by herself when a group of 15 and 16-year-old boys approached her, threw her over a wall, and Ms. Fedosieva came outside, found her daughter unconscious, had to take a taxi to the hospital because there wasn't any gas for the ambulances. And Ms. Fedosieva told this long story about how she arrived at the hospital, she spent 40 minutes speaking to a Latvian doctor who refused to treat her daughter because she's ethnic Russian, and then she had another long talk with a Russian doctor who refused to treat her because she's ethnic Russian, and only then was she finally given the opportunity to have her daughter treated. Again, testifying about the exact same incident, her story completely changed again. This time, Ms. Fedosieva claimed she was at work when her daughter was walking home from school and was attacked, and she only knew of the attack after she returned. She received a phone call at work telling her, your daughter's in a hospital in a bad way, you should go there. Ms. Fedosieva was given the opportunity to explain all these inconsistencies in her story, and she just simply claimed, they were difficult times, and I'm bad with dates. Now, bad with dates would explain why, in one instance, she said it happened in 92. Another time, she said it happened in 93. With other stories, she said something happened in the spring, and then it changed, so it happened in the fall. But being bad with dates does not explain the basic underlying incidents, the difference between three men versus two. You were kicked repeatedly. You were struck one time. They gave you medical care. You didn't receive medical care. You found your daughter unconscious. You knew nothing happened until a phone call was made. Ms. Fedosieva simply did not meet her burden. There's nothing in the record that compels the conclusion that she was credible. And even if she were credible, there's nothing in the record that compels the conclusion that she was persecuted. Ms. Fedosieva claims that she was persecuted because she was dismissed from her job. Regardless of which story you believe, it does not rise to a level of persecution. If she voluntarily quit, that's certainly not persecution. If she was forced to quit because she didn't know the Latvian language, it was Latvia, and that was a requirement of the job because their visitors were Latvian, and that is not persecution. If she was indeed fired because she's ethnic Russian, that's not persecution because she herself testified that she was able to find another job at another company, and so that is not persecution. Returning to the statelessness issue, Ms. Fedosieva does not per se qualify as a refugee simply because she's stateless. She must show the same well-founded fear of persecution. And does not have a state to return to, the regulations look at her last country of habitual residence, which is Latvia, and she did not show a well-founded fear of persecution in Latvia. If there are no questions from the panel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you.
Ms. Margolin, you may have another minute.
Just very quickly, Your Honor, with regard to credibility, I think it's very important to note that at the time of trial, the petitioner was testifying to things that had occurred almost 11 years prior to that. And when you look at the overall picture of all the details and all of the incidents that occurred to her, most of it was, in fact, consistent. There were problems with translations. She was dealing with a translator at the time.
Margot, and the government represents that today 95% of ethnic Russians are granted the opportunity to stay in Latvia. So what about that recent in-country report?
Your Honor, we're talking about the only thing we're talking about, the country reports. In Galina versus the INS, the factual situation presented before this very court was identical. We were dealing with a Russian woman claiming asylum from Latvia. We were dealing with country reports for the same years as here. The language in those reports is almost identical. It says human rights are being respected, everything is improving with respect to Russians, with respect to elections. If you look at reports consistently for each year from 1993 until the present, the language is the same. And this court was not convinced in that case, and they should not be convinced. They treated those reports with skepticism, and they should do so in this case as well.
All right. Thank you, Margot. Thank you, Gerard. The case is taken under advisement.